Hi, Jeff. It's such a nice pleasure to have you at Growth Mindset On. And as I normally do, I ask guests to introduce themselves.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Christina, for having me on the show. As you said, my name is Jeff Gardner. I'm head of platform partnerships at Intercom, previously head of support at Intercom, and have been with Intercom since nearly the beginning of when the company was founded. So my job currently really entails kind of the product and platform, or the product side of platform. I work really closely with a lot of very small businesses up to very large businesses who are trying to build apps for the Intercom App Store. And so that sometimes looks like helping them kind of dig through technical issues and figure out how to build the app that they want to build. And other times that's kind of working really closely with them to understand, you know, what is it that our joint customers might want to do, and, you know, more on kind of a PM or project management aspect of that.
Okay, that's excellent. Thank you, Jeff, for being here. And it's interesting because, as you said, you've been with Intercom since its early days. So more or less, could you explain a little bit the story of Intercom for those people who probably don't really know it?
Sure, yeah. So Intercom is a kind of platform for communicating with your customers. So if you're a business, we think Intercom is the best way for your entire business and everybody in your business that needs to talk to customers to do that, and for your customers to get in touch with you. So kind of the core of the product is our messenger, which you've seen all around the internet, I'm sure. It's that little icon down in the bottom right corner of the screen in a lot of websites. And that messenger is how, you know, these businesses actually talk to customers. But the tools we actually provide on top of that messenger are really for sales teams, support teams, and marketing teams, you know, so that they can get their jobs done easier, more effectively, more efficiently, that sort of thing. So it's, you know, inbox products and sales bots and that sort of thing.
So you're saying that Intercom itself has like an app store. What can you explain a little bit about it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we are, I think it's kind of, it's no surprise that a company our size would have some sort of app store marketplace. It seems that there's kind of an app store for every single company these days, or everybody's trying to be a platform. But it's an interesting thing to look at with Intercom, because I think, you know, from even the very beginning, we always had this thought in the back of our head of like, we're taking on such a broad category, you know, trying to just connect businesses with their customers in any shape that might take, is a pretty broad remit. And so for us to look at that and then try to make progress on that, we knew from a very early on point that there were plenty of things that we were just never going to get to and never going to do within the product. And so we knew we needed to have really strong APIs. And, you know, now we've got Canvas Kit, which is sort of our framework to embed UI or embed apps right in the context of either the messenger or the kind of admin interface of Intercom.
Wow, that seems excellent. And I bet everyone knows the platform as you well, very well explained it. And it's fantastic. But yeah, it's definitely, there are so many things that beyond the messenger, that's probably something that everyone knows of Intercom. But the other side of things, probably something that it's people who are not in the field probably don't know that you're doing more than that. Okay, so what I was very, very curious, Jeff, it's as you said, you've been from the almost very beginning with Intercom, it's the fact that you've grown with the company professionally and personally, I imagine. Explain me the fact that you've had like different roles in the company, and right now today you are head of platform partnerships at Intercom, what things you've learned throughout the process and also the growth of the company?
Yeah, gosh, I mean, so many things. When you join a seed series or a seed, you know, stage startup, things function a little differently than when they're much bigger companies. And really, you know, I used to joke with the support team that like, no matter what kind of process or you know, policy we put in place, if you didn't like it, don't worry, we'll have to scrap it anyways in 6 months. So you'll get a chance to rebuild it again anyways. So it is one of those places where I don't think it can, you know, I don't think working in a startup can be matched anywhere in business or in, you know, any other professional life, just in terms of the raw amount of things you have to learn, and the speed at which you get to go through those kind of different phases of growth. So I think it's kind of in the DNA of Intercom. It's, in fact, it's one of our company values, which is, you know, we love people who genuinely want to learn and grow. And so, you know, it's something we hire for, it's something we fire based on, it's something that really is like stitched throughout Intercom. So in some senses, I was just kind of lucky to land at the right company where that is a really strong value. And, you know, another thing that I think, you know, we really believe in is like taking big bets on people and taking bets on potential. And so I was kind of very quickly thrown into a role where, you know, I'd never hired anybody, I'd never managed anybody, but here I was starting to manage this growing support team and trying to figure out how to grow it, you know, kind of 100% year over year. So it was a great environment for learning. That's for sure.
So, Jeff, you are American and, yeah, Intercom, it's, based in London, like the headquarters, correct me if I'm wrong.
It's actually, so our headquarters technically is San Francisco, but, so our four founders are all from Dublin, Ireland. So the company really started with a very large Dublin office, a smaller San Francisco office. And that's sort of evened out over time, but we also now have Chicago, London, and Sydney as well as those two.
So, and how come did you start working in San Francisco? Explain me a little bit. Now you are living in Europe. Explain me a little bit your location story throughout these two countries or two continents.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So I actually, my wife and I moved here to Italy, a little village up in the north, kind of north of Lake Como, before I started working for Intercom. So we've been here for almost, I guess it's 9.5 years or so. And we moved here principally because of the mountains. We were both really into climbing and skiing and hiking and all the things that kind of come with big mountains. And so we wanted to live somewhere close to mountains. So when I started working at Intercom, I did so remote, and I've kind of been remote for the entire time that I've been here at Intercom. It's been another one of those situations where I put myself in a place where I had to learn a lot really quickly when we moved here to Italy.
Wow, so it's interesting because I think that's one of the things, like remote work, like for example, Envision is one of the company that's 100%, everyone in the company is 100%, or all their teams is 100% remote. And I'm curious on how you kind of, you know, you've been able to grow professionally, although it's remote. I've never done remote work, and it's one that I defend it. But if you are a clear example, and could explain more on how you kind of deal with it. And do you think it has some drawbacks, or it's all positive aspects?
Yeah, so I guess I'll be, you know, quick to say, definitely not like Envision in terms of like everybody's not remote. You know, it's probably the tiny, minuscule minority of us actually work remotely at Intercom. And in most cases, it's, you know, very specific to the role, very specific to the person as well, for when somebody in Intercom gets to go remote. That said, I am a huge, huge proponent of it. I think for all the obvious reasons, like it's easy to hire really great people because you're not, you know, bound by location. It's also a lot cheaper because you're not paying San Francisco mercenary prices. And, you know, I think in general, what you find is that people who can make remote work for them, which isn't everybody. Like some people just, you know, they become horribly lonely. They just hate it. They can't deal with it. But for the people that it works for, it's just like way, way higher quality of life for them. You know, I live in the Alps. I live in a small village. I have zero commute. I get to take my kid, you know, I get to make them breakfast in the morning and then take them to school, which is literally the building next door to our house. So like I get to do all these nice things and sort of remove all of the, you know, the dead time in a day, as it were. And I know you can use your commute well and that sort of thing, but, you know, I feel just like my life, my quality of life here is much, much higher than it otherwise would be. Wow. Now, when it comes to trade-offs, yeah, there's definitely trade-offs, you know, and it very much depends on the company you're working for. If you're interested in being remote, like it does definitely pay to look for a company that's remote first, or at least, you know, very keen on lots of their team being remote, because you really need to sort of change the way in which you work. It doesn't make any sense to have lots and lots of face-to-face meetings, even with, you know, the quality of Zoom and that sort of thing. You know, video calls are just not the same. And so you really need to start to think about, how can I work more asynchronously? How can we do more via writing rather than talking? And as a team and as a company, you all sort of have to buy into that change, or else it just is much more difficult to kind of make it happen in an effective way. And there are always reasons to, you know, meet face to face with people. You know, you build relationships faster, and you know, sometimes there's some really high throughput work you need to do, really creative work a lot of times, that you need to be in the same room with a person. And so you also have to be kind of open to this idea that, like, every now and then I do need to go and meet with my colleagues and be with them, if nothing else than further relationships.
Yeah. Wow, that's it's excellent. I didn't know that it was before you decided to work for Intercom that you already were already living abroad. And how you knew it from the very beginning that the position was already remote, or is something that you asked for it?
I asked for it. Yeah. So they were, you know, I've got a really good friend who's our VP of engineering, and I had known, you know, I'd met Des and Owen, two of our founders, previously, and you know, I think honestly they were probably pretty just desperate for someone, and so going off the back of, you know, a recommendation from a friend, they went, okay, this will work, this will be fine, you can work remotely.
Wow, I think it hasn't been bad for them, because, you know, at the end you've been with them for 7 years almost now, and you've had several positions, and I suppose this has helped the company a lot. And especially at such a position with a head of partnership, which is something I understand it's at the core of the business.
Yeah, well, I hope I've been useful at least.
I'm sure about that. So yes, basically you are telling me that you are super interested in climbing. How do you think, like, all the values that you've learned in climbing, how do you think you can relate that to, I don't know, to your the teamwork? I imagine you also work in a team, although it's remote. How can you, you know, the values you can learn in climbing can be related to also to your professional job?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. And I think, like, there's plenty of, you know, kind of the sports and standard sports analogies that you can draw and all that stuff. But I think one of the things that stands out to me in both climbing and a lot of times in business, just in general, and teams and problem solving, is that you can kind of toil away trying to get better at something. In climbing, you know, you're going out every day, you're trying, you know, maybe the same route, you're trying kind of stuff of the same grade and same difficulty. And you can be trying and kind of stuck at a certain level for quite a while. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, you know, you sort of jump up, you know, a significant amount, not just like a small incremental amount, but you kind of, there's a step change that happens. And it's never really clear, like, what that step change came from. It's not like, okay, you know, I got like a brand new pair of shoes, and so now I can all of a sudden climb way harder. It's like, it's a bunch of small things that you can't, none of which you can quite put your, you know, finger on. But you know that, you know, this has happened, and now I'm all of a sudden better at this than I was before. And I think working in, you know, especially high growth environments, you can kind of bang your head against the wall on a certain problem for a long time. You can, you know, really try and understand, like, how to get better at hiring, or, you know, how to get better at managing. And it doesn't feel like you're making any meaningful progress when you kind of think about it at the end of each day. But then at a certain point, you know, either like the problem sort of presents itself, unlocks itself, and you kind of go, I know how to fix this now. Or, you know, it's something, if you're, you know, thinking about something like management, you kind of look back over a period of time and you're like, oh, actually, I do feel so much more confident and comfortable than I was, you know, back in the day. There has been a lot of change between now and that period before. And so I think, like, the lesson, I think, across the board is just, stuff takes time, and good stuff always takes time. Like, there's no real, like, solid shortcut method to any of these things. We all listen to a lot of great podcasts like yours. We all read a lot of great books. But, you know, those are all just like little data points that slowly kind of filter in, and you really have to be doing something for, you know, an extended period of time before it's really gonna, you're gonna really see the benefit from it.
Wow. Yeah, that's, I think it's a very good advice, because in a world of instant gratification, where we are so used to kind of, you know, get everything so easily and so quickly, you know, we, I don't know, even Amazon itself, you know, buying on Amazon, you get it, you know, in a few hours, or the next day, or if it's 2 days, it's like, oh my God, it's taking so much, you know, I'm just going to complain. Or, and it's I think this is something very important, and this reminds me of Simon Sinek, a talk about millennials, you know, where he says you cannot get, you know, you want to change the world, but you can do it in a, like, I don't know, a week, 2 weeks, I don't know, a year, not even a year.
No, that's a really, really good point. And I'd forgotten about that talk, but you know, now that you mentioned it, I remember it really well. And it's so true, right? Like, I think you see a lot of people, and I've seen lots and lots of people come and go at Intercom at this stage. Mm-hmm. And you see people get like frustrated or fed up after like 6 months in a role. And you're like, come on now. Like, it's only been 6 months. Like, you really just spent the first 3 months just figuring out where you are, like orienting yourself. And now you've been, you know, trying to be productive for 3 months, and you think like you should all of a sudden be master of the universe. Like, it doesn't work like that. And so I do think that, like, you know, whatever, like, I think technically I'm like the oldest millennial in existence. but like, you know, in theory I'm a millennial. In any case, though, like, I do, you know, I think that's a fair thing to be leveled against kind of our generation in a lot of ways, is that we're in too much of a rush to get there. And in a lot of cases, it's just not possible. And I guess the older I become, the more I can look backwards and go, yeah, it's just totally true. And like, I, you know, I used to be a super impatient jerk as well.
Yeah, because it's excellent that you brought that through climbing, you know, because I think sports, and I mean, in this case, climbing, as you were saying, I don't climb, but it's something that's very interesting, and it has happened. I can relate to that in some other, you know, even at my work, or some other stuff I've been learning, or languages, you know, it takes time, and probably, I mean, I suppose you speak Italian already, but you know, probably you've been the first year, you know, not able to have like a fluent conversation with, or the first 6 months with a person there. And, you know, but there is one day when you've been learning all the way through, and you're like, okay, now I'm able to speak, because you've kind of been, you know, acquiring lots of information, kind of lettering this information, filtering down, assimilating it. And after everything comes together, and it's, you're able to know that you've done that next step, and you are able to do it confidently, as you will say.
Right. Yeah, that's another great way to think about it, is like the language stuff is definitely hard, you know, and learning a language for anybody is difficult. And, you know, what it takes is a lot of time and effort, and sort of waiting for your brain plasticity almost to catch up with the situation around you in a lot of ways.
So what is very interesting, that you kind of knew from, I imagine that you kind of knew from the beginning that this was the lifestyle you wanted to live. What it came first for you, it was your passion, which in this case was the mountains, climbing, and second, kind of, you know, the job, which is very interesting, because some people, you have accommodated the job to your life, and some people do the other way around. You know, like they have to move, I don't know, to San Francisco, or they have to move in terms of, you know, probably who are very career focused, because that's their idea of success. But what I see is like your case is a successful one, because you're getting to live the life you want to live, and living where you want to live, and the type of life you want to live, and at the same time, having a great job.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. And I used to be much quicker to sort of, you know, pontificate about the, you know, how people shouldn't, you know, go career first or care about, you know, work as much as they do. But, you know, I think that's like also the wrong way around. The right way to think about this is people need to like really think hard about what it is they want to get out of life. I mean, like, it's totally cliche, but you only get one, and they're not that long. Mm-hmm. And so it's important to stop and go, where do I want to be? What do I want to do? Like, what is my bucket list? You know, what are the things that matter a lot to me? You know, I've never been personally a person that like really enjoys cities. You know, I can have fun in a city for a week or a weekend, but If I am in a city for any extended period of time, I start to lose my mind. You know, I need green. I need, you know, mountains or ocean or something that's not generally readily available in cities. And so I think people need to look at that, and people need to decide for themselves, like, okay, what is important to me? And sometimes it's a time period thing as well. You know, like some people go, you know, really hard on their career for a while and then say, okay, cool, now I'm done. Now, I think a lot of people want to say that that's what they're going to do, and they forget that there was a cutoff point in their mind in the beginning. And so that's where I'm always kind of like, when I see a really young person like going crazy after their career, you know, unless they're like really loving the place they are currently, you have to ask, okay, but why? You know, like, why are you going so hardcore in your career? Like, you know, it's not a guarantee that you're going to make it another 10 years to retire early at 40 or whatever it is. So, you know, think a little bit about how you're spending each day, because every day that goes by, you're not going to get back. So I think, you know, more people would be benefited, I think, by thinking both about like what they want to be doing, but also where they want to be doing it. Right. Cause I think, you know, location is really, really important to, mental health and sort of happiness in life.
Yeah, completely agree with that point, you know, because we kind of, I think we get carried away by what we're being told, or what's the idea of the mainstream idea of success, and how much you should be earning or where you should be living. And probably, you know, that's not for everyone, you know, and you kind of have to know that, you know, looking inside yourself and see like, you know, do I really, you know, want to be doing this, or is it because something that, you know, I don't know, family ideas or society has been imposing on me that what I should be doing, you know? And definitely, I think mental health, it's something that day and day more, it's more common to talk about, and it's definitely very important of where we're living, which is, as you will say, you know, spending your free time in a place you are enjoying and you feel free, you know?
Right.
And also related, also kind of, we're doing analogies to climbing. I've done it once, so I have to say that normally it's you're working in partnerships, no? You need to have your partner there with you. What type of climbing do you do?
Yeah, so that is mostly true. And I know everybody's probably out there has seen the film Free Solo about Alex Honnold. So it's not always true that you climb with a partner, but most of the time that's true. And it is totally true. Kind of for most aspects of climbing, you're doing it with someone else. You have to put a ton of trust in that person. Obviously, it's your life in their hands, literally. And to be honest, it's like not only that, but it's also a lot of trust in the systems and the kind of the gear that you're using and all the rest. And so, I think those things are subtle lessons, but like really important lessons nonetheless. You know, when like the first time I landed in Camp Thorne in Yosemite, you know, it's kind of famed climber campground, and everybody's just there kind of for a period of a few months or something for the summer, for the season. And you don't always show up with, you know, a partner that you're going to have for the entire time to climb with. And so you spend a lot of your time kind of meeting new people, deciding, you know, do I trust this person enough to go climbing with them? Do they seem like they know what they're doing? Are they, you know, kind of roughly my level? Am I going to have a good time out? And there are plenty of horror stories when people make those choices, you know, poorly. There are also plenty of lifetime friendships that come out of those situations. And so you're right, like, you know, choosing the people you want to be around and the people you want to do stuff with is also, I think, really important.
Wow, it's just like just choosing a co-founder, no? Because you definitely, yeah, putting your in this case, I think it's definitely more important, because it's your life at the game, no? It's your life, the one you're kind of playing with, but on the other side, it's about your business or you know, who are you going to share your time with in when taking important decision, and I think that's definitely something crucial. And I suppose choosing the right partner, it just happens, and you know, just I suppose it's normally about trust. And I think this kind of takes us back to work in some cases about like teamwork, you know, like relying on our coworkers. We're choosing the right people to work with. I understand. Do you like have a team who works with you, and how do you kind of work in terms of remotely, because I understand that your company, in order to kind of allow you to work remotely, there is some kind of trust that you're going to do your job, or and I think that's something that we are lacking in most of the companies, especially, for example, here. I'm living in Barcelona at the moment, and it's startups do definitely have that a lot, but like more traditional companies are kind of afraid to let go workers to work remote, because I think it's an issue of trust, because they don't trust that they're going to do their job if they are not at work or in the office.
Right. Yeah, and like going back to the earlier point, you don't climbing partnerships and finding partners to go climbing can actually be fairly safe to test out with new people, as long as you know what you're doing in terms of what the right way to climb is. The worst situations I've ever seen have been people who are not very confident in their own abilities and in climbing and understanding the systems, and then they jump in with someone that they think is much more projecting much more experience and that sort of thing, and then they find themselves in trouble and they can't get themselves out of that trouble. And the same, I think, is totally true with teams and companies. It really is a situation of building expectations and setting expectations with each other, and then just sort of executing against those expectations. And so right now I have a very, very small team, but I think a great example of this is when I was building out the support team and it was getting much larger. We were, the only company or the only team in the company at that stage that was global, globally distributed. All of our R&D team was based in Dublin. All of our sort of sales and marketing org was based in San Francisco. And support was the only one that was in both offices and a couple remote locations, including me in Italy. And the way we handled that was both being, very careful about how we vetted people and how we brought people into the team. But also just, like you said, it's a lot about trust. And, once we had sort of set the expectation of what we were looking for and, knew what the, person on the, that was joining our team's expectation was, we could very easily align ourselves around, okay, these are the ways in which we work so that we can, meet those expectations. And so that, we're basically trying to keep, as sort of calm an atmosphere as possible. It's not always possible in startups, but, you can, by kind of setting up all these methods and kind of patterns and, rituals on a weekly and daily basis, you can make things seem a lot more calm and kind of collected than they might otherwise be. And so we just put a lot of time and effort into working asynchronously and not depending on face-to-face meetings. And because of that, that's just became the way we operated.
Wow. I think that's definitely something, something to bear in mind and to have present, because, I don't know, for example, at the company where I am, normally holidays are kind of people who go on holidays. It's kind of an issue because, we are not used to kind of not be working face to face. And if we kind of had implemented some, as you were saying, some other way of working that doesn't imply face to face, it's easier to kind of also do work when the people are not there, and something that most of companies should have at least know the processes that this implies to implying this type of work, or to get a job done, to get the work done. So it's very interesting the point you highlighted here. And
yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. And as you highlighted, as you're doing a partnership, I would like to ask you, what do you define as a strategic partnership? What is your definition of strategic partnership? Because at the same time, I understand it's always about win-win partnerships. What the sense of it in general, it doesn't have to be necessarily work-wise, but how do you define that? Because probably there are people out there who's, doing the very first early steps in, probably starting partnerships. And that's a very difficult approaching people, the very first approach. And even myself, to get people for the podcast, at the end of the day, it's some kind of partnership. It's not always easy, Yeah, if you could explain more about, how what do you think is the keys to kind of close an interesting partnership or translate the message that it's a win-win partnership, even at the very beginning it may not seem very equal or super balanced or something in the long run. What is your definition of it or your sure. idea of strategic partnership?
Sure. Sure. So, I mean, I think there's a few things to think about, like defining strategic partnership really is sort of down company to company and individual to individual. Like you really have to know what the organization's goals are and like what they're after. Something that's like very strategic to Google might not be at all strategic to Amazon, right? And so, you see this a lot when it gets into, when you see a really small company bought for a huge sum of money and you're like, what in the heck were they thinking? A great example is WhatsApp and Facebook. Like at the time, everybody was like, oh my gosh, they're paying how much? And then, now everybody just generally agrees that like that was a, pennies price that they got WhatsApp for. Like they would have been, it would have been a great deal at like 10 or 15 times that amount. But like, so from that point of view, I don't know that I can necessarily comment with anything helpful. But I think one of the ways that I like to think about, trying to get people to build on the App Store is that it's, like you said, it has to be good for both sides. And you have to remember that it's a really long game. So especially like in any industry, but software is no different. Like it's a very small industry. Everybody knows everybody. It is global and all that, but it's amazing if you've been in it for even just a few years, how many times you run into the same people over and over, and there are different companies and different things. So I find that it's much more about building trust. And if there actually isn't a reason for both companies to do, a partnership or a deal at that point, it's better to just leave it on good terms and say, let's check back in a few months. Because there's no benefit really in forcing these things. Maybe there's a few small cases where that makes sense, but it's not what I've found so far in partnerships, the way we're working them, is that there's no benefit in forcing it. You're actually just going to breed animosity, or you're going to have a team that doesn't really want to build an app or work on this thing with you. Whereas if you just waited 4 months, maybe their roadmap changes, maybe their own company strategy shifts a little bit, and all of a sudden it's become really important. So I think it's easier just to stay on the kind of high road and just be someone that people want to work with, because you've kind of shown yourself to be high integrity. You've shown yourself to be someone that they like working with, that's easy to work with. And I think that generally will help you carry much further than trying to like eke, terms out of a deal or trying to force people into a contract at your timeline.
Wow, that's some very great highlights there, and I think what you've said definitely makes sense, because it's important for both sides, and forcing it just make it very short and probably unpleasant, and probably just waiting for the right time, makes the relationship solid, and as you well said, for the long run. Now I understand the idea what you were mentioning at the very beginning, just being patient and waiting for things, that good things take time, and it's definitely we can relate it to a strategic partnership too. So one last question to kind of close it off. What I'm super curious is about that you've grown in the company and you've had different roles. And how kind of you did the process from one to another? It was something that came to you? It was something that you kind of asked for it? Or because probably there are people out there who kind of it's very complicated to, or not, grow in the same company. I mean, if you're in a startup, probably it's super easy, whereas a corporate, it takes more time and it's more difficult to go to, to step to some other position or kind of right. shift. So how was that for you, all that process?
Yeah, like I totally agree with you. On point number one, like the startups versus big companies, if you want to grow a ton and be put in situations that you would never otherwise be put in by an IBM or an Oracle or even like a Google at this stage, go to a startup, because you'll you know, you'll have the chance to work on crazy stuff. And in a lot of cases, you'll end up, you know, running much bigger teams much faster than you would otherwise. I'm a prime example of that. When it came to changing from, you know, running support to doing platform partnerships, it was a little bit of both. Like I'd sort of put my hand up and talked to a few folks, you know, senior folks in Intercom and, you know, friends at the stage and said, look, you know, I feel like I'm sort of reaching the limit of what I'm enjoying here. It's a very big team. We were about 100 people at that stage. My job had shifted from sort of building to maintaining and like optimizing in a lot of ways. So I spent a lot of time with, you know, my senior managers on the team who are both extremely capable, one of whom is now the director of support at Intercom. And I spent a lot of time with like our people ops, our HR department. And I spent a lot of time with kind of other leaders. But I didn't really feel like I was, that I was like operating at the level I should be or the level that I really enjoy. You know, it was partially me putting my hand up and partially kind of trusting the process by me saying, look, maybe there's something else. And then, you know, lo and behold, they had an eye out for it and they were looking for things that might suit. And we were redesigning our messenger and kind of really starting down this platform path at that point. And they said, okay, here's another area where this is like sort of going back in time a little bit and going back to the beginning and saying, okay, here's a thing we don't really know a ton about. We don't really have a lot of, kind of preconceived notions about how we should set things up or how we should operate this. Please go in there. There's an immediate need just for this, you know, redesign of the messenger and getting a few core partners to get off the ground. But then we figured there'll be a bunch of other stuff we need to figure out. And we're sure that you'll be able to help do that. So it was very much just kind of a, hey, this is super ambiguous. It's going to be a bit of a mess. But that seems like what you enjoy. So just get in there and have at it, which worked out really well.
Wow, that's excellent. And also it's to a question of trust. You've trusted them that they were not putting you in something that it's totally different or you have no idea of, or at least, so you trusted them in that kind of giving you this next position that was something that kind of related to who you are and it related to kind of your background or who you are as a person, which is also very important whenever you're taking up new challenges. And definitely they knew you like challenges and off they went, now offering you this new new position, which is excellent.
Yeah, it worked out really well. It was great fun. It's been great fun so far.
Wow, so this is a very good tip also, because sometimes you probably some people probably are afraid to speak up or say, to humbly say, this is something I've been doing this for a long time and it's not something that I'm enjoying. And definitely knowing to be able to express that and share it with the company and with the right people, they will definitely do something kind of try to help you out if you are the person they want to keep in their team. And it's always about, talking and expressing ourselves. And sometimes it's difficult, but probably for the people listening, which is something important, just if you talk in the right moment rather than waiting until the very end when you're like, probably stressed or burnout and you don't want to do your work anymore, just speaking and trying to get to some middle ground terms with the company.
Right, yeah, that's actually something really important. I feel like a lot of people get wrong earlier in their career. They sort of, they want to point out things that aren't being done correctly or aren't being done correctly according to them. They also want to be put into positions of responsibility really, really fast. They want to, lots and lots of promotions really quickly. But it's also fair to say that like, listen, the better way to approach all of that is, come with, hey, look, I found this thing that I don't think is right. And like, these are three different like solutions that I think we could put in place. So come with solutions rather than just problems or even worse, rather than just complaining. And then understand that if you have slowly built up this sort of trust and, building autonomy or accountability within a team, like those opportunities will come, and you have to sort of have a little bit of trust in the other, the people the exec team or whoever they are, or your manager in that company. But you really have to build and own that accountability before someone's going to all of a sudden trust you to do a job that you've never done before. So, you know, it was very much, yes, there was a lot of trust. There was a lot of back and forth. There's a lot of conversations, but, you know, I think that like the reason ultimately it worked is because I had, you know, shown them, look, you know, I did this big stretch here. I've done this kind of 0 to 1 phase before. And I, you know, I enjoy being the generalist in a group and like, you know, just figuring out how the problem solves on the fly. So, you know, I had kind of shown them what was going to suit, and then they had to just look for the thing that kind of matched that, that pattern.
Wow. Yeah, that's excellent. Very, super great advice. So yeah, Jeff, it's been great talking to you, and really enjoyed the conversation. So thank you so much for your time, and enjoy Italy.
Thank you so much, Christina. It's been great talking to you today.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.